The British Festival of Science, as it's now called, has been going for about 180 years. It's where they named dinosaurs. It's even in 1833 where they first coined the word scientist. This year, the festival was in Guildford in Surrey, and it's where Professor Stuart Hazeldene of Scotland has just announced how Britain could make a fortune from carbon capture and storage.
Well, carbon dioxide is emitted on a large scale from burning coal and burning gas to make our electricity. And in Scotland and the UK as a whole, most industrialised countries, that's about one third of each country's emissions of carbon dioxide. So if we can capture that and store that below ground, that's a really big hit very quickly on climate emissions.
How much of that carbon dioxide could you actually store away?
You can capture 90% of the carbon dioxide at any particular power station. If we take account of the whole chain of that fuel from mining coal or producing gas right through to burning it, it actually is about 75% of the carbon dioxide from that whole chain. So it's still a really enormous contribution to cleaning up that quite dirty industry. And we have to do this because at the moment we're dumping that into the atmosphere and we're going to see the cost with that when extra storms, rising sea levels, crop failures, all that climate change aspects people are very familiar with.
Well, let's take it step by stage. Do you then pump it as a gas or do you liquefy it?
The fuel can be burned at the power station, and then instead of sending the carbon dioxide up the chimney into the atmosphere, that flue gas is bubbled through a solvent. Solvent is taken away, heated up to about 140 centigrade, and the pure carbon dioxide comes off that. That's then pressurised, which liquefies the carbon dioxide above about 70 atmospheres of pressure, which enables that to be piped through a conventional steel pipeline many tens or hundreds of kilometres. And in the UK, we're going to be placing our carbon dioxide down through boreholes, just like oil and gas boreholes, deep beneath the North Sea, about 1 to 4 kilometres beneath the North Sea.
And that pumping, that transport has been done for some years, hasn't it, to pump up oil, actually, so it has been done. But where will the CO2 go? Which part of the rocks?
Well, what we're targeting here for the CO2 storage sites are bodies of rock which are called saline aquifer formations, which are a normal sandstone which contains about 30%, one-third of that is space, microscopic space, and that carbon dioxide will physically displace that water and push it out of the way initially, and gradually over a few tens of years the carbon dioxide will dissolve in that water to make fizzy, salty water, rather like the sparkling water people may be accustomed to drinking.
How do we know it won't just bubble up again and come out?
We know that carbon dioxide storage will work for two reasons. We can find natural oil and gas fields around the world where we have buoyant fluids trying to escape and float up through the crust of the Earth. And we know that that oil and gas has been stored there for many millions of years, perhaps tens of millions of years in some cases. The other reason we know carbon dioxide storage will work is we can go to natural carbon dioxide fields in the United States or in Italy or in France or in Hungary, and we can find places in the Earth where carbon dioxide has been naturally stored as a liquid, and again that's been stored for many millions of years. So what we're doing is looking for geological combinations of circumstance where that occurs, and we can engineer an artificial storage site.
And you've got more than practically the whole of Europe. You could make money out of it, could you?
Well, we've, in the Scottish Centre for Carbon Storage at the University of Edinburgh, we've recently done the first extensive survey of the offshore parts of the North Sea, looking specifically for these saltwater aquifers. And to our surprise, we found out there's an absolutely giant resource of storage capacity there. And in fact, 95% of the storage available is in these saltwater aquifers. The other 5% is in depleted gas fields and depleted oil fields. So that amount of storage, we calculate, can take 100 years' worth of all the power station emissions from northwest Europe and store that just in the Scottish part of the North Sea. If we partner up with Norway, just across the political boundary that has identical geology, we could store the same amount again. So the offshore part of Europe holds a giant resource to clean up Europe, and that's a benefit to Europe and a benefit to the world, of course.
And your idea is you can sell the space, and by selling the space, the cost to the power user won't be that crippling.
That's right, because the space in the UK, the space is owned by the Crown, effectively by the government, and that space can be sold because that's now a valuable resource to store carbon dioxide. So if you sell that storage space perhaps for 10 UK pounds per tonne of carbon dioxide, for 500 million tonnes a year, that's 5 billion UK pounds a year, which even for the UK is quite a substantial revenue.
Yes, you were quite unkind to the British government, saying that they weren't exactly in a hurry to do this, but you did say that the Americans are moving fast and the Australians. How fast are both of the latter going?
With the new president in the United States, we've had a total U-turn, realising that climate change is a very serious problem. What the United States is doing is subsidising and funding experimental power plants doing this of several different types in the United States, and they'll also be going into China to help the Chinese and fund new power plants in China. And that's exactly the right thing to do, because that creates business for the United States and it cleans up world emissions. Yeah, Australia is very well positioned to do carbon capture and storage, because just like the UK, there's a lot of offshore geological resource in southern Australia which can store carbon dioxide. Offshore the northwest shelf of Australia, one of the biggest CO2 capture projects in the world at the Gorgon field will go ahead shortly in the next 2 or 3 years. And so Australia is going to be a world leader in this.
Final question when it comes to whether this is putting off the inevitable. Won't it in some ways enable us to keep sinning because we've got this opt-out technology? How do you see it?
You're quite right, we're carrying on sinning. I'm sinning, you're sinning, most people listening to this are sinning. If we all stopped sinning, then we wouldn't have to do it. What carbon capture and storage offers is a very quick reduction of carbon dioxide emissions on a very large scale. That gives industrialised countries more time to develop renewable energies more extensively and a cheaper price. And eventually, by 2050 and 2070, I would hope, and I think many would hope, that renewable energies take over from this.
Stuart Hazeldine is Professor of Sedimentary Geology at Edinburgh. But as you may have seen on Four Corners a couple of weeks ago, the building of these carbon capture plants hasn't been happening.
There's no question that the basic technology does not require any breakthroughs. We know how to gasify coal. There are many coal gasification plants around the world. And we've even buried CO2 in places like oil wells for enhanced oil recovery. But we've never put it all together. The whole coal plant, the whole carbon capture, the whole sequestration, and then measuring and verifying that the CO2 stays there, because it wouldn't do anybody any good if you just injected it underground and it seeped out over the course of several decades. That would render the whole thing pointless.
Dr. Joseph Brom, Center for American Progress, with Liz Jackson from Four Corners. The science may be ready, but the rest isn't happening yet.